trenches. Ask a nigga what he benching. Triple digits, nigga, don't forget to mention. Hold hard in the trenches. Ask a nigga what he benching. Triple digits, nigga, don't forget to mention. Don't forget to mention. I got mention. Memories, dead stain the whole room if I let him bleed. Shit was dark, I let this Lord light him out. Some niggas got rich off a zone.
Made double digits of upper a bone. I don't want to cut the song off, but we got work to do. We got work to do. Oh, man. All right. Here we go. There we go. Woo! Welcome back to another episode of the Trap or Die podcast. I've done a few aftermath shows, streams, and I'm trying to narrow down like a concept for the Monday shows. I've been tweaking things here and there and trying to find what's some right things. And now that the regular season is here, I think I got a little structure going. I'm gonna see how this one goes today. But I hope everybody is well. I hope, you know, everybody who is tuning in and listening, podcast, whether it's YouTube, Twitch, iTunes. Hope everybody's doing good, man, because I just want you all to know. First week of the season is not the end of the season, everybody. It is not the end of the season. I hope everybody enjoyed their first football Sunday of the year. The first NFL football Sunday of the year. Because there were some really good games on. Well, for me, I don't know, because I'm a gambler. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't that many good games on, at least in the 4 o'clock hour. A lot of the good games are really on in the 1 o'clock hour. Blowout City. Oh, Lord. I got to make my bet still for the Ravens and Raiders. But yeah, not that many good games in the 4 o'clock hour, but, Blowout City with the Rams and the Bears. So I'm hoping tonight it turns out pretty well. I'm leaning the Ravens for those who are gambling. Matter of fact, let me check the spread right quick before we even continue. You know what I'm saying? I gotta do my thing. I'm doing my homework as I'm doing this. Oh, 3.5. Wow. The spread dropped. Okay. All right. Okay. Chiefs game was nice. Absolutely. All right. So, everybody, appreciate everybody who's tuning in, all that good stuff. Twitch, if you're watching on Twitch, follow if you aren't. YouTube, if you are watching the playback of the stream, like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Podcast, if you are listening to the podcast, please subscribe, rate, review, help us out, all those good things. First and foremost, let's go ahead and get into the most important thing. Now, I think it's safe to say, I mean, if you were listening to my previous stream, I did get hate rated yesterday. But I think it's safe to say, and if it does happen, I want to give you all the heads up. Everybody who's actually here in the live stream, you know, if something goes wrong in terms of like the calls or something that happens in the chat box. I want to apologize in advance because I have to clean it up and I'm going to take some time to do that this week. It's a long story, but at the end of the day, there was some racism in the chat yesterday that kind of screwed a lot of things up and they're still following me right now. So I have to clean that up. With that being said, I'm going to give out the number for everybody to call in. 443-242-4479. If you want to get things off your chest, dealing with the aftermath of the Chargers and Washington football team, the floor is yours. I'm taking calls all throughout the show. This isn't going to be the long show. It's probably about 30 minutes or so. Just cleaning up some things, some items that happened after yesterday. And I did pose a question if you all wanted to answer it. And it was, has your expectations for Washington football team changed after their loss to the Chargers? What was your expectations and have they changed? So that's that. It's a lot to start with. Let's clean it up. T said, what's going on, T? I don't want to hear top five anything until I see something better than yesterday. Absolutely. Sleazo, yes, F the Jets. But you had a couple, and we talked about it right now. I'm not going to sit here and say I was perfect. But just to remember, like, when you have those parlays, for those who don't know, Sleazo, my boy Sleazo, had a 10-team parlay. So 10 different bets had to hit on one ticket. And when it didn't hit, it was going to be that type of situation. So let me go ahead and take our first call. And we will transition back to the fan experience at FedEx Field. That was worth noting. All right. Let me make sure that I got the call in. All right, there we go. Hello, who is this?
Question me with that.
Who is this?
Yeah, sir. You already know, man. Bro.
What's good, man?
I'm about
what's
to
good?
Drop some knowledge.
Hey, so the floor is yours. I'm gonna give it to you, man. Let us know where you at, man. I know it was a rough outing. You are my man's though, because I love your takes after games. Because it's like I laugh at them, and then I know like what you're saying is 75% true, but also it's like, damn, bro, it's only one game. but yeah, after floor is yours, my brother. Go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. After yesterday's loss, I told myself I'm not going to overreact. One, I was too drunk to really even feel the pain of the loss. So I was cool. I was cool. I said, it is week one. But I texted you earlier. I said, if Heinicke is Colt McCoy, we don't know what he is. If he is Colt McCoy, then we are in trouble. And it's going to be a long year. And we all had high expectations. No one really knows what Ryan Fitzpatrick injury is thus far. I've heard 3 weeks. I've heard 6 weeks. I've heard it was the same as Tua's injury. Now, my thing is he's 38, and he didn't look great. Neither did the O-line yesterday. So I don't even know what him being there would do. I'm just hoping that, you know, they can turn it around very similar to they did last year. Now, you know me, and I'm going to use this word a lot when I call into your show, talking about the politics of the league. I just found out that we signed Kyle Shermer.
Yeah, practice squad.
You mean to tell me? Now, and I want your opinion. I want your honest and true opinion, dog. And I'm not doing this. You mean to tell me you don't think that Cam Newton would be, I don't want to say ideal, just somebody that will give you a chance, essentially. I understand Fitzpatrick may come back. I understand the circumstances, but Kyle Shermer, if Heinicke goes down because he has a history, and Kyle Allen may potentially go down because he has a history, you know what I'm saying? You mean to tell me Cam Newton wouldn't be a solid option?
So let's go ahead and clear the record, I guess, for those who aren't familiar with what's going on right now, because it's the perfect opportunity to do so since you brought it up. For those who aren't aware, there has been updates on Ryan Fitzpatrick. For those who aren't aware, Ryan Fitzpatrick has been placed on IR earlier today. Today we are recording. It's Monday the 13th. He's been placed on IR. And then as recent as an hour ago, which would be like 6 p.m., 6 or 5:30, something like that, there was a following update that, from credit to Adam Schefter for this one, Fitzpatrick is out, I think, between 6 to 8 weeks. So we are going to be missing Fitzpatrick at the bare minimum 6 weeks for the remainder, or at least the next 6 to 7 weeks for the season. So that is an update on Ryan Fitzpatrick. He did suffer a hip injury yesterday afternoon. For those who weren't aware of the injury that he suffered. To answer your question, I think it's beneficial for me to phrase it this way for you, because I know what you was getting at, and I know you was trying to figure out the best way to say it. I think somebody else already surmised it this way, and it kind of works, Montel, is that yes, Cam Newton is better than Taylor Heinicke. He is better than Kyle Allen. But would it make sense for Washington to infuse that into the offense right now? And I think that's not me. This isn't me saying that. This is what the person who said it, like, it makes it, like, that's kind of where we're at with the Cam Newton thing. And I agree that Cam Newton is better than Kyle Allen. I agree that Cam Newton is better than Taylor Heinicke. I don't necessarily know what they plan to do with that quarterback that they signed in practice squad. I don't even think they're going to elevate him. I don't even know what they have planned for him. But I think that they're holding out for another move. I just don't know what it is. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to give the floor back to you about this Cam Newton thing, because I want to see where your head is at. But I personally think that he's better than Taylor Heinicke. And I think that he's better than Kyle Allen. I think the question is fair to ask, like, how much sense would it make to bring Newton in when you have Heineke in a situation where he can come in and immediately be productive, given that he was here?
So I see exactly what you're saying. And what I'm saying is I'm not even saying bring Cam in and let's start him right away. Let's bring Cam into the practice squad. Because you have the ability to do that now. Let's keep him as a safety net. Let's implement some plays that he's been accustomed to while you were in Carolina. You know what I mean? Just somebody that gives you a chance, because right now, and it's only week one, but if Thursday comes around and Heineke's fumbling the ball, and he's banged up like he is per usual, this is going to feel like a lost season. And it's going to feel like that in week two. And you already have – I don't know how many people were at that game yesterday. It wasn't like a packed house. You already have a fan base that is somewhat numb to it. Like, you texted me yesterday, I'm used to losing, bro. I've been accustomed to losing. It's like, we got to start doing things to win games. I don't care about, how does it look if Cam Newton is in the locker room or this and that. Nah, I want to try to win today because – We have a talented team. They didn't perform well yesterday, but this is a talented team. Outside from the Cam Newton aspect, I just want to get on our defense. I said this at the bar yesterday that I was at. The defensive line is overrated, and a lot of people don't like to hear that. It's very similar to what I said about Alex Smith last year. The media coverage, and the same thing I say about the Cowboys, the media coverage makes you think that these people and these teams are something that they are not. We are not better than the 49ers defensive line. We are not better than Tampa Bay's defensive line. You know what I mean? But it's a good defensive line. It's a lot of names, but honestly, let's be 1,000%. They don't produce at a high level on a regular basis. And yesterday, I didn't see anybody make any plays, which really frustrated me. You know what I mean? But me understanding who they are, trying not to overreact to them playing great or playing bad, I think that they were the primary reason we lost, bro. Like, the D-line and the defense as a whole.
Let me go ahead and emphasize
uh-huh. this before I leave, and I'm going to let you get it back, but you got to do something now at this quarterback position. You got to do something for the here and now. I don't care if it's Cam. I don't care if you make a trade, but we can't go out there and tell him if he looked like a bum. Or Taylor Heineke get banged up, which has been prone to happen. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying this isn't something new. This happens. He gets injured, or he turns the ball over. So what are we gonna do to try to counter that? Like, why is it so political? Why can't the best players get opportunities to play football? Because that's what it's about. It's not about vaccinations. It's not about his hair. It's not about his personality. It's not about none of that. I want to see the best players on the field. And if Cam Newton gives you a chance to win, granted, he played terrible last year. If he gives you a chance, bro, I want to see him on my team, because right now we don't have no options. Make something happen. You're an NFL coach. Scott Turner did not look good yesterday either, but I'm going to let you go ahead and get it back.
Hey, man. So I'm gonna ask you one more thing before you get up out of here, because I appreciate you to be calling in and stuff like that. The question I asked to the people on Twitter and on my when I started the stream, has your expectations changed for the Washington football team after their loss to the Chargers? I'll ask that to you before you get off. What is your response to that?
That's a good question, because if I'm being 100% honest, yes, they have. I had high expectations coming into the season, and I know week one doesn't determine the season, but I really look at this. To me, the NFL, you got to have a quarterback. I look at this quarterback situation, like I said, I'm one of the few that has faith in Heineke, but the injuries concern me. Same way I told you a few weeks ago how Curtis Samuel's injury history concerned me. Injury-prone players get injured. I think with Fitzpatrick in the game, I'm a little more confident, just because he didn't really have an injury history. It was just like more so he was a gunslinger and he would win you game or lose your game. But I was confident that Fitzpatrick was going to light some teams up this year. Now, I just don't. I don't know with Heineke. Now, I have faith because I have hope that really I don't really have a choice. But
right.
Like I said, we got to see Thursday, because if he come out there, he's turning it over. I really think that if some teams get some tape on Heineke, we might be in trouble, though. So it's like if Fitzpatrick is out for 6 to 8 weeks and maybe longer, it might be a rough go this year. It might be, and I think that is what changed my perspective more than anything, my expectations. It's like, it wasn't the fact that we lost. Had we lost and Fitzpatrick finished the game out, you know what I'm saying, and we lost 16-20, even if he didn't make a lot of plays, I would have been like, in my head, you know what, Fitzpatrick, well, he's going to come out there and light somebody up for 3 touchdowns, you know? But, again, we'll see how Thursday goes.
Yeah.
It's a long season. It's a long season, so I don't want to be, you know what I'm saying, overly pessimistic, but that is a concern. And if you're ignoring it, that's a concern. And I don't know what to tell you. Don't get your hopes up too high. We got to see what this man look like, number four.
Yeah, you absolutely. Gotta see. We've seen 6-7 quarters, eight, probably eight at most.
I like them.
6-7 quarters. Of Heineke, so
I like what I've seen.
Yeah, so we need to see a little bit longer form version of Heineke and see how he holds up against multiple teams in one season versus just sporadic moments in different seasons. So, all right, hey, I appreciate you calling in, bro. Obviously, we know where we are with Cam. We've been talking about Cam for a good little chunk of change. The people don't know that, but we've been talking about Cam for a little minute. And you and Nick been going.
I feel like I
you and Nick been going back and forth.
That. I really want to expand on it. You know what I'm saying? Going down the road on another show, because I know the Skins just played yesterday, so we wanted to get into that. But I really want to talk about the politics of the NFL specifically. I don't know if you could just put a segment aside for me. It could be 15 minutes, but I really want to speak on that. And it's not just in regards to Cam, but a lot of players in the NFL, and we see it. We see it so often, but a lot of times we ignore it as fans. But to me, it kind of taints the game. And it sucks, because this is a sport that I really love. So, again, we'll talk about that later, though.
Yeah, we'll talk, man. Hey, enjoy the game tonight, bro. I'm about to fire up the grill in a second after this joint is done and check in. Oh, yeah, see? Smart man,
Now, before I dip, Ian and them wasn't on the show today, was they?
Nah, that's tomorrow. They'll be on tomorrow.
Okay, I seen y'all game planning. All right, man. All right, take it easy, big dog.
All right, bro, you be safe. All right. So that was my boy Montel. To answer your question, T, I'm gonna circle back to some of the things that he said, but I don't know if RG3 was being serious with his tweets. The thing that kind of threw me off, for those who don't know, or those who aren't on Twitter listening to this. RG3 had a series of tweets since Sunday. And this is what kind of threw me off, T, is the fact that before he tweeted that he should be signed by Washington or Washington should come get him, he made a tweet about Jameis Winston, congratulating him in a very weird way about some crab legs. It was weird. So I would follow his timeline. If you all aren't aware, just check his timeline and see some things. So he mentioned that was his very first thing that he brought up, I believe. And then secondly, he told Washington to come get him. The reason why I brought the Jameis Winston tweet up is the fact that I don't think he was serious with that tweet. Yeah. I don't think he was serious with that tweet to begin with. But secondly, I think he was like feeling a wave of momentum to just promote himself. So given that Fitzpatrick went down, he saw that opportunity with Washington and said, you know what, the time is now. So yes, it was very weird. And Sleazo, it was kind of crazy. So what's going on, Cole? Cole mentioned that Cam is too big a distraction and isn't good enough to warrant that. I agree. I think, again, I got to reiterate, I wish I could credit the person who mentioned this. And this is the last thing we'll kind of speak on Cam. But He's better than Heinicke. He's better than Allen. But is he the best fit for this team right now, given the situation that they're in? Heinicke can come in and produce immediately. Technically Cam could. He can just run the football. But Heinicke can come in and run the offense more efficiently than Cam. And on top of that, Cam will be serving as a backup. At the moment right now, is that worth bringing Cam in and saying, you know what, sit on the sideline and when your time comes, it comes? Not really. I don't think so. But there's just something else that Montel mentioned is the defensive line. The defensive line was very surprising. And I want to get to the fans and just spotlight some people's experiences for those who weren't at the stadium, for those who are far away from the stadium and just want to understand what FedEx Field is like nowadays. But again, he mentioned some things, and I'm going to bring it up right now while the time is right. That defensive line, man, we'll start with Chase Young. Chase Young versus Rashawn Slater was not pretty. And this is according to Pro Football Focus. Rashawn Slater, the Chargers rookie left tackle, he was the second highest overall grade for Pro Football Focus, the second highest pass block grade for Pro Football Focus, with the second most snaps, according to Pro Football Focus. For 53 of the 81 snaps that he had, He was staring at Chase Young in front of him pre-snap. This is from Tampa Bay Trey on Twitter. He didn't allow, out of the 53 snaps, he didn't allow one pressure. Now, we don't know how many of those 53 was actually, passing plays. So I don't want to emphasize the fact that all 53 was passing, because they weren't. However, he had plenty of matchups against Chase Young. There was no pressures from Chase Young on that side when he faced Rashawn Slater. And that's just kind of indicative of two things. One, how good Slater was to begin with. As a rookie, it's very impressive to go up against the defensive line that Washington does have. But secondly, the fact that Chase Young has had some disappearing acts against some of the better tackles in the NFL. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say he's supposed to be dominant against all of them, but you're supposed to have moments. You're supposed to have moments. Chase Young had zero pressures against the rookie. That's not a moment. He didn't allow for any moment. He didn't create any moments against Rashawn Slater or Justin Herbert. And that's something that you just got to be aware of, man. And I'm not going to harp too badly on Chase Young in this game, but it is an eye opener, man. And it's kind of, I'm going to transition to the defensive line, but it's kind of, we're in a spot here with this defensive line where, you have, let me look, 'cause I got it in my phone. You have the New Orleans Saints offensive line coming up, Kansas City Chiefs, Denver Broncos, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Dallas Cowboys eventually. You'll have more opportunities to come up against better defensive lines, and if you aren't showing up against these guys, Chase Young is going to be in a bad spot. No more elite talk. No more generational for anyone on the team. Chase Young isn't elite yet. Yes, you're right, Cole. And I'm about to give the number out after this one more point that I want to make for the defensive line. And then we can take another call. Hold on 1 second. The next thing, because we talked about Chase Young, is the pressure rate for the Washington football team against the Los Angeles Chargers. For those who aren't aware, or you just were busy watching other games like the Eagles and the Falcons, the Washington football team's defense, specifically their defensive line, we're not going to talk about the blitzing and the ineffective blitzes and Jamin Davis and Cole Holcomb getting stonewalled at the line in their blitz attempts. The defensive line had only a 12% pressure rate against the Los Angeles Chargers in week one. No offense allowed a lower pressure rate than the Los Angeles Chargers in week one, like they did against the Washington football team, who is arguably the best defensive line in the NFL. Arguably, in quotations, and the best defensive line being in quotations as well. This is another eye-raising stat, and kind of something where I'm not necessarily. I'm gonna hand it over to Cole. For those who want to call in again, the question that I pose, you can get things off your chest, it's perfectly fine. But the question I did pose, if you wanna have a hit a specific topic, has your expectations changed for the Washington football team after their loss to the Chargers? The number is 443-242-4479. I'll put that in the chat too. Hold on 1 second. The number is 443-242-4479. Hey, Sleazo, you are hilarious. But yes, that's the number. And that's kind of where we're at with the defensive line, man. So I'm going to go ahead and take this call. Let me see. Transition. All right, there we go. Who we got? Is this Cole?
Yeah, it's Cole.
Yes, sir. What's going on, boss, man? Good to speak with you.
No, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, right, man. So, go ahead and get things off your chest, big dog. You got the floor.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, I went to the game yesterday, and it was good to be in there after 2 years. So, I mean, that was good. The fans were loud. There weren't too many Chargers fans there. It was a good overall experience. So, you know, I guess, like, the biggest thing for me, like, that stadium at the beginning of that game was as loud as I can remember it being.
Mm-hmm.
The fans were bought in. Everybody was loud. And that first drive, I think the Chargers won the coin toss. They got ball first. We had exactly what we wanted to have. We had our unit, the unit we've been building for years and years, on the field first.
Yep.
With the crowd going crazy. And they came and they just drove the ball down our throat. It was surgical, right?
Yep.
And right there, that set the tone. And then, you know, as a fan, you get all of those feelings of, you know, here we go again, you know, nothing's changed, all that. So basically, like, the game itself, I was very frustrated with the game. But I think there's two ways to look at this. There's a short-term point of view. You know, it was the game we lost, 0-1, game we had a chance to win. But there's also a long-term view. You know, the decision to make this a defensive team was made before Ron Rivera was brought here, right? Like, I mean, this goes back to 2017. They drafted John Allen. Ever since then, they've been doing the first-round picks. Basically, we're deciding to build a team in a way that is the complete opposite of what the league is doing. The league is an offensive-first league, and we're saying, oh, that's okay. We're going to build a defensive team. We're going to shut these teams down. I disagree with that 100%, but that's what we decided to do. So, you know, all right, cool. I got to go with it. But the thing is, when you do that and you get these, you know, first-round draft picks, they can't have games like last night. They can't have games like against Tampa Bay or some of the other games they come up against elite quarterbacks.
Dude, the Rams.
The thing is, the Rams. You come up against some of the NFL is skewed towards offenses. It's just too easy for these offensive coordinators to scheme up quick passes that will neutralize your pass rush. No matter how many, you can have Reggie White and Derek Thomas on both sides of your defensive line. It don't matter. The league is built to neutralize that, you know, that type of attack. It's not 1985 anymore. This is what we decided to do. I'm sorry, Chase Young. I love Chase Young, PG County, all that. He cannot have games like he had yesterday. You got to see what an actual dominant edge rusher was when Joey Bosa.
Joey Bosa.
In the game, literally every play, Joey Bosa was in the backfield. Like, I looked on PFF and after the game, I think he only had one sack, but he had like 4, 5, 6 pressures. And then I look around the league, Chandler Jones had 5 sacks yesterday. TJ Watt was terrorizing. And then you look around the ring. Both Bosa brothers, they've been good since rookie year. Wrecking games. Like, wrecking games. And I guess my point is, this is the way we decided we're smarter than everybody else. We don't want to do offense first. We don't even got a quarterback, all that. We're defense first. Well, then you can't have games like yesterday. And if this is the norm, when we play any type of good team, I don't know where we're going. So, like, I'm kind of looking at more of a long-term long-term aspect of it, because that's very concerning, right? Because to me, in the NFL, like, what makes a good defense? Like, you're going to give up yards between the 20s. No way you can really stop that. Even, like, you watch the Buccaneers, like, you know, Dak just did whatever to them. Andy Dalton was moving the ball in the Rams yesterday. Rams have an elite defense. The best defense is what they do. They stop teams from scoring touchdowns. They hold them to three, and they get them off the field and get turnovers. If we're not doing that, I really don't know what we're – I don't know what we're doing. So you know, that's what concerns me.
Here's one thing that I just want to – I want to give an alternative perspective. You actually spoke on it, like, for a split second, but just to drive your point home, while I get what you're saying with the defense and the drafts that they had recently, and – I agree with your point that when you draft your first round picks, they cannot afford to have games, especially a top five pick, a top two pick at that, where he's a complete no show. Now, we do got to give credit to the Chargers, but to have absolutely zero pressures, that's and not even like have less than three, like you had zero against a rookie, and so I give credit to the Chargers, but then I also point the blame and drive your point home that I agree with you. With all that being said, and the route that they took, I think the issue that you spoke on for a split second is the quarterback thing. You took no time out to really invest into, what is it, 2021? Let's say since 2012, you really didn't try and find that young rookie quarterback. You always kind of found a makeshift and found things to work up until 2017. And when Kirk left, it's like, all right, let's trade for all these older guys and hope things work. You went from Alex to, Kirk to Alex, the case. I mean, and then obviously you drafted Dwayne. Dwayne was a flop. But Dwayne was also something that really wasn't a coach's choice. So that's kind of why I kind of let him slide in that thing, but
that's a Dan pick.
Yeah, that's a Dan pick. So like nobody really invested in the quarterback position for nearly a decade. It's 2021. It's nearly a decade and nobody really invested in quarterback. And before 2012, when was the last time they invested into a quarterback? It had to be like 2004 with Jason Campbell or 2005, excuse me, with Jason Campbell. They've over a 2-decade period have really only tried to do this two times. And it's unfortunate, man, because again, if you're going to go defensive side, you have to find that moment and that time to go for your quarterback. You can't just do the makeshift things that they've done over the past couple years or the past few seasons and hope that these older guys can just come in and keep the ship afloat, because that's literally what they're doing.
Yeah. And I don't want to, and again, this year's draft, I wasn't really a fan of Fields or Mac Jones. I'm not going to criticize them for not going up and get those guys. Cause honestly, I kind of would have felt the same way I felt when we drafted Haskins, how we got them. Not that they'd be like that type of player, but just like, oh, there's still a lot of questions there. But I guess more so just even not the quarterback thing, because you try with Haskins, it was a damn pick, whatever. But even then, you got to look at like our skill position guys, right? Our starting running back, I like Antonio Gibson, but he's somebody who's, you know, played like a weird wide receiver RB hybrid in college, right? That's an unconventional pick. Tight end, I really like Logan Thomas. Like, I really like his story, but, like, he's, like, a converted tight end and all. Not that he's not good, but, you know, we kind of just took a flyer on him. He happened to turn out good. Cool. Wide receiver-wise, we got Terry. That's great. I'm really excited for De'Ami Brown. But then, you know, Curtis Samuel, that wasn't my first choice in the free agent period with to get Curtis Samuel. I'd rather would have had somebody like Kenny Galladay or something like that. I feel like Curtis Samuel, even the injury stuff aside, is just somebody who's like a, you know, kind of like a gadget type Tavon, like a rich man Tavon Austin type player. I just don't feel like we've invested in the offensive side of the ball. Like, we're kind of trying to do what the 49ers did in 2019, right? So you just have like an elite wrecking defense, which we don't have, unfortunately. And then you have a quarterback, you just say, all right, don't screw up too bad, which is why they signed Ryan Fitzpatrick. But even if Fitzpatrick plays, he's going to screw up. So that's like a strange plan, but you have just guys on offense that can just go and, you know, make plays here and there, but the onus is on the defense. And, you know, now we're just seeing that plan, I mean, is that really a sustainable plan to win? Like the 49ers made the Super Bowl doing that a couple years ago. Sure, but then you look around, look at most of the playoff teams now. Most of the playoff teams that make the playoffs year in and year out are teams that are threats to score 40 points every game. And I'm not off the bandwagon or anything like that. I mean, it sucks about the Fitzpatrick thing. That adds a whole other element to it right now. Yeah. Like now you have uncertainty. So you can't even really get to decide if the plan is working or not, because like somebody like Scott Turner is always going to have that excuse to fall back on now, right? Oh, well, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick's hurt, so, you know, can't really judge me fully. But it's just, you know, it's just frustrating, right? We were all so excited going into the season, and now
it's a gut punch, man. That Chargers game was a gut punch, man. They came in here, they set the tone from the get-go, the Los Angeles Chargers did, and essentially while only scoring 20 points, like our good man Marshall says, the devil is in the details, man. And if you're looking at the scoreboard by itself, the box score, you're not going to understand how dominant the Chargers was in that game, being able to take over the game with their time of possession. Look, I didn't even realize this until I heard somebody say it earlier today. The Chargers had 9 possessions total in the game. 7 of them ended up in Washington's red zone. 7.
It seemed like they had a million drives. Yeah.
Yes.
But they only had 9 because they had the ball. And literally, like, you know, I got to give the fans a ton of credit in the stadium. I mean, like, we were loud, like, the entire game. Like, even, like, in the ebbs and flows of the game, they were dominating early. But every third down, the fans were loud. But, like, every third down, it's just a conversion, right? It's just, I mean, Keenan
19
Allen.
19 times y'all had to make noise. Or 18 times y'all had to make noise.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Keenan Allen live, bro. It's just something about watching elite players live. Like, Keenan Allen is so good out of his cuts, and just the way he just stabs at the ball. Like, that's just a talented team, man. Like, that they really are. Like, jeez.
Absolutely, man. And, Cole, I'm gonna ask you this before we get up out here, because I appreciate you calling in.
Yep.
I'll ask you this one thing. Has your expectations changed for Washington football after their loss to the Chargers?
Oh, yeah, of course that was a question. My bad, sorry.
No, you're good. You're good.
I mean, yeah, right? So, like, before the season started, I if you follow me on any type of social media, you know, like, most of the time I'm pretty, like, pessimistic or realistic. This was the first time I actually was like felt like a fan, and I was like, you know what, we're gonna win 11 games this year. Like, the defense is gonna be dominant. You know, they were I think number 4 in DVOA last year. We're gonna be right around there. The offense is gonna go from, like, I think they were the dead last in DVOA on Football Outsiders. They're gonna be like half, like maybe like 16th, whatever. And you're gonna win 11 games. I mean, after yesterday, this is kind of, you're back to, you know, this team just is that same team that, you know, we've all watched for our. I mean, for people like you, probably around my age, like, yeah, like our lifetime. So honestly, I'm expecting them to go out and probably get roasted by Daniel Jones on Thursday. So yeah, my expectations have definitely changed. Unfortunately, I'm at basically you have to prove it to me. Same thing with, you know, with the Capitals and the playoffs and the Nationals. Like, no more expectations. When you do it, I'll be here. I'm not leaving, but like, when you do it, then I'll be here. So.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. Cole, I appreciate you calling in, man. And look, we got a game Thursday, my brother. So we got a short turnaround. We forget about the Chargers game and focus on these Giants, man, and try and get this Giants, New York Giants monkey off our back, bro.
Oh, God, hope so. Yeah.
Absolutely, right. Bro. You be safe, big dog. Enjoy the game tonight.
All right, thanks, man.
All right. Okay. All right. So that was our guy, Cole, calling in, man. Good guy. I've been following him for years, it feels like years. Okay, so he mentioned the fan base a few times, and I'll get through. I'm gonna close out on the good note, because there was a lot of good things that came out of this question that I asked. I got 2 things on my agenda that I gotta talk about that's negative, and then I'll close out on the fan base. Okay. So we mentioned the third downs, right? 18 third downs that the fans had to make some noise for. Cole mentioned that they were pretty loud. So there was 19 total attempts, but the 19th was a kneel down. So 14 of 19 was the Chargers conversion rate on Sunday afternoon against the Washington football team. According to Matt Paris, who found this on Pro Football Reference, Washington's 13 third downs allowed are the second most in franchise history. The 1994 Redskins gave up 14 third downs to the Philadelphia Eagles in week 6. He mentioned it at 3:55 p.m. yesterday, Sunday, during the game. So clearly that was not done yet. and shortly after, obviously, he mentions, there it is. A tie is a new record. In 1994, the Eagles converted 14 of 21 third downs. The Chargers are 14 of 18. So the Washington football team tied a record. This vaunted defense that a lot of people mentioned was the heart of this team and was supposed to take over and carry the team if the offense struggled. The thing is, you weren't expecting the offense to make a jump from 30th in the NFL to top 10. It was because the question of this Washington defense take another step with the talent that they added. And that's not the outing that you want to have in your week one opener. Ron Rivera, Jason Wright, all of these people who I forgot the other dude who had just joined too, got with fan relations and stuff like that. But these guys are encouraging fans to come in here, and the fans met them halfway. They showed up to the stadium. And what does Washington do when the fans come up and say, you know what, Ron, you know what, team, we got your back. This is a new year. We're loving what you guys are doing. They put up a dud. And the best side, or presumed best side of the team, the defense, put up a major dud. And that's just not the stain that you want to leave your team and your fan base at home in that first game of the season for the 2021 campaign. Short turnaround coming up, so hopefully Thursday things work out. So I will say that was one thing, and then the next thing is something that I just found interesting because I'm young. I'm 27. I'm turning 28 in a couple months. This is from a Michael Phillips tweet. It's kind of depressing. But I'm gonna get this out of the way and then we'll transition to the positive. Okay. Washington football team record by, because for those who don't know, Local Beat reporter JP Finley of NBC Sports Washington turned 40, this past week. So he just did a record count by his age. So his youth, Washington was 101-51 throughout his youth years. 101-51 was their overall record. During his teens, they were 77-82-1. During his 20s, they were 68-92. During his 30s, they were 63-96-1. During his 40s, 0-1. I don't know if that means JP should, you know, go national or do like national stuff, but obviously there's a trend here and he is the problem. No, I'm playing, but it's not that good right now, man. And unfortunately we're in that space where Washington is trying to turn things around. And like I mentioned briefly just now, this team is trying to get the fans back involved. And Ron Rivera mentioned that he piqued the fans, has their curiosity piqued. But if you aren't showing up, man, like that talk, everything that you all got going on, the football Friday practice, man, where you speak to the fans and try to get them hyped up for the season, which is what you're supposed to do. If you aren't meeting your side of the obligations, the fan base that had their curiosity peaked, man, they're going to come back and say, you know what, just like Cole said, you know, I'll be around, but I'm going to be around from a distance, man, to hell with y'all until y'all start showing me that y'all can win and compete against the best and compete on a week in and week out basis. So that's that. All right. Last thing, we're here. Cause I did take some calls and we'll worry about the rest later and transition to the New York football Giants. Is some things. So I posed a question on Twitter earlier today. And I asked the following serious question for the Washington football fans who attended the game yesterday. What was the atmosphere like? Actually, I'm going to show you all the question over here so you all can just roll through it with me. Here we go. I'm done with the Skype calls and we can go ahead and exit out. I appreciate everybody who called in and stuff like that. Let's go ahead and transition so you all can see the screen. Where is it at? Boom. Okay. All right. So here we have the question. How do I zoom? Make sure y'all are good over here. Okay, here we go. What was it like? What was the atmosphere like in the stadium during the game? I emphasize this part because, you know, tailgating is one thing. That's an experience within itself. But I want to know what it's like during the game. majority of Washington football fans that was there? Like, was it, excuse me, for the fans that was there, was it majority of Washington football fans? Was it high energy, et cetera? Let's go ahead and scroll through them so you all can take a look for yourself. And for those who are listening, I'll read them out for you. But we have one, Mark, mentioned that, you know, the energy is better than it has been. There was still a large amount of Chargers fans, but probably like a 75-25 ratio. And this is going to be a theme as I go through them. There was awesome parts, but the fumble in the 3rd and 16 completely deflated the fans. Cole, my boy Cole, who just called in. So there you go. You can follow him right here. Wasn't sold out, but the place was buzzing, especially at the start. Fans were loud and stayed loud until Gibson blew the game. There weren't that many LA fans. It was like a normal NFL game with visiting fans, not the normal FedEx takeover. Rio, the vibes were great despite the heat. I wish fans weren't cheering I wish fans weren't cheering Heineke's name while Fitz wasn't still on the ground, though. Building went nuts after Jackson's pick and Gibson's fumble started to send some people home. All right, Trev mentioned it was electric. A lot of Chargers fans as well, but the whole scene was rocking. Majority of the Washington football fans, what's going on, Jazz J? Energy was high, but there were still a lot of empty seats. Disco, great energy. Charger fans were insignificant, although they were there. Fans really wanted something to cheer for. The Gibson fumbles sucked every drop of enthusiasm out of the stadium. Cole mentioned another Cole, not the same Cole. Heineke chants once he came into the game. Good atmosphere. Chargers fans showed up, seemed like everybody was happy to be there. I'll read a couple more. I'm not going to go through everything. There was a lot of responses. I sat on the visitor side, lower level, and I was surrounded by a good amount of Washington football fans, and they were super energetic throughout the game. Great atmosphere from where I was. Leading, burgundy and gold. Energy was crazy until the Gibson fumble. Lower bowl was full. Club level, empty as hell. Lower bowl made about as much noise as they could. Okay. So appreciate you for responding, Gary, but you know, we want to see what it's like inside the stadium. High energy, and yes, 75% was Washington football fans throughout the stadium, which is also better than years past. All right. There was a few things, man, that people are going through. And the theme here, Coda, I know you was going to do it. The theme here are two things throughout the entire thread. So I'm going to save you all the trouble from me reading every single thing, right? The theme is the Gibson fumble, which was very deflating for obvious reasons. William Jackson III, who, in my opinion, made the only play for the defense throughout that entire game. That was the only play that I've really seen somebody step up and make. He makes that interception in the red zone, forces a Justin Herbert turnover. Justin Herbert made a poor decision, and William Jackson made him pay for it. And Antonio Gibson comes out the very next play, if not the second play afterwards, and fumbles the football inside the five, and it turns into a Los Angeles Chargers touchdown. Very deflating for a team who was really struggling to grasp momentum and take over the game. That's the first thing. But secondly, you're talking about these guys. I'm just so confused, man, because like it was very the whole situation, man, throughout the entire game, you kind of get confused. Like, you're trying to steal this game from the Los Angeles Chargers. This was a moment where, you know, you weren't dominating, you know, you weren't necessarily supposed to be in it. 7 red zone trips on 9 drives. The game could have been worse, way worse than what it really was. If they went 7 for 7, you're looking at 49 points. 49 points. So that was the most possible, according to their red zone attempts, that they could have scored. And again, Washington fans stood there thick and thin, man. And they couldn't come through for him. So it was just very confusing, man. But at the same time, Antonio Gibson was the first thing that stood out. That was deflating. And then lastly, was the Heineke thing. There was a lot of people that was cheering for Heineke. Look, if that's your quarterback, man, that's one thing. But you got to understand, and I'll leave you all with this one. Heineke, sure, if that's your favorite quarterback, fine. But Fitzpatrick didn't do anything to warrant hearing Heineke's name get cheered for while he's still down being injured. While he's still down being attended to because of injury. He didn't warrant that. And if that's his last impression of Washington football fans, fans who really didn't know him or he didn't really get to know them, and they're cheering for the backup quarterback while he's down injured, that's not a good look. It's not a good look. So it sucks for Fitzpatrick to go down the way he did. But secondly, that Heineke comment where people mentioned, you know, people were cheering for Heineke while Fitzpatrick was still down. Now that's kind of a stain. And you don't really want to hear that. I'm sure Fitzpatrick really didn't want to hear that. He wasn't thinking about it that much, probably in the moment because he was hurt. But eventually he'll think back about it and it'll be something to him. And where you're not necessarily sure why they were doing it, but it's like, damn, I thought I was the starter. Like, what's y'all not really concerned about me? So I leave it at that. And I won't hold you all longer. Like I said, it was a sore string, man. And I'm gonna go ahead and get up out of here. So schedule for the remaining of the week. We have Nick Filato. He covers the New York Giants for the Big Blue Banter podcast and the Big Blue Review for Sports Illustrated. So he'll be checking in with us tomorrow to preview the Thursday night matchup between the Giants and the Washington football team. That's tomorrow, 7:00. Wednesday, all 32 side of the Trap or Die podcast. We'll be back. We'll be talking about everything. NFL recap. You know, the fellas are in, so we're not necessarily featuring anybody. So we're going to be talking about our games, our teams, and things like that. And then obviously Thursday, pregame and postgame stream. And obviously we'll be talking about everything Washington football and the Giants following their game. So that being said, I won't hold y'all. Get up out of here, man. Appreciate y'all for watching. Appreciate everybody who tuned in for as long as they did, man. And y'all be safe. All right. Peace. Whole heart in the trenches.